Welcome to the English-speaking edition of Christina Wanders, a podcast where I ask, why is the world the way it is? Why is it so hard to change anything? And what can we all do to make our world a better place? I am Christina Wunder, and today I want to share a talk that I gave a while back at women.codebe, a community for women who code in Belgium. I spoke about why I believe we should all prioritize mentorship in our careers, and I share 9 life lessons that I wish I had known earlier. I hope you enjoy it, and as always, reach out to me with any feedback, questions, and requests for collaboration. You can subscribe to my newsletter at christinawunder.substack.com or find me on social media under Christina Wunder.
I'm Christina Wunder. I'm German Kazakh and I work in communications. In the past, I worked as a press representative in politics and science. And for the past 2 years, I've been working in the tech sector. Over the years of working in communications, I developed a passion for tech, for data and artificial intelligence. And with my friend and teacher, Saida, who's here today as well, I co-founded the School of AI Brussels, which is a learning community for people who want to learn about AI, machine learning, and data science. It's kind of a nice and easy place to start. But today, I actually want to talk about a topic that has become a huge factor in my life and career as of late, which is mentorship. So let's maybe start at the beginning. Growing up, from my early childhood on, I was taught that in order to have a good life, the most important things in the world are education and hard work. So this lesson came with kind of 2 implicit and sometimes explicit rules, which is number 1, you're a girl, and so you have to study and work twice as hard. Number 2, you're an immigrant, and so in order to succeed, again, you have to work even harder. I never knew the reasons for these rules, but there were many situations and experiences where they proved to be true, sadly. So hands up or drop a little something in the comment section if you've ever experienced someone else, for example, a white man, putting in less work and still getting more credit and less criticism. And hands up again if you are in some way culturally diverse or non-white. And I'm sure that you know what I'm talking about and you maybe even know it much better than me. So looking back on the last 10 years of my career, I've come to realize that hard work is not everything, as much as our fake meritocracy wants us to believe it. There are a few equally true and important lessons and rules that I wish I had known much earlier. Talking about them in hindsight, they seem so obvious, but they took me so many years to learn due to the hardwired belief systems that our sexist, racist, ableist, classist society has implanted in us over the past decades and centuries. And it took me years to unlearn certain behaviors and learn others, because we never talk about them. And so I've decided that I do want to actively talk about them because it is important that we talk about them. One reason is very pragmatic, even if it is a simplified one, because boys and men are socialized to take these rules and lessons for granted, and women are not. In fact, don't we all know the stubborn myth that women simply can't support each other? They're always in competition. I'm not like the other girls and stuff like this. So these myths remain an old trick to prevent us from forming bonds, from supporting each other and taking up space. Men seem to help each other out, even if they don't know each other personally. Why is that? Well, traditionally, men, especially wealthy men and exclusively white men, have been occupying the public space and as such have seen themselves as part of a collective. For example, when the US Constitution was written, we the people specifically meant we the men, and that was on purpose. In fact, the wife of one of the writers of this constitution urged her husband to please not forget about the ladies. He and all the other men purposefully ignored her. When the French drafted their Charter of Human Rights, droit de l'homme, again, they quite literally meant men's rights. Women, on the other hand, have not seen themselves as part of a female collective. And how could they? They were not only denied human rights and constitutional protection, they were also not humans in their own right, but would instead belong to their individual family unit, headed and represented by their fathers, husbands, brothers. This was fortified by the legal doctrine of coverture, which started in the Middle Ages, whereby upon marriage, the woman gave up her separate identity under the law, and her husband, in effect, had the complete legal and economic control over her. So by law and by social convention, women have been relegated to the domestic space. And by the way, legal coverture was never properly abolished. These laws still exist. They just were eroded by increasing rights for women. So it's not surprising that women still struggle to see themselves as part of a female collective. And what about the alleged competition? Where does our distrust towards other women come from? Well, storytelling, from the Bible to fairy tales to modern Hollywood plots, supports this myth that the public sphere only has space for very few of us, the prettiest one, the chosen one, not the many. These stories matter, and we have to rewrite them. We're increasingly becoming aware of our power in numbers, and we're increasingly occupying the public space that women were denied for centuries. And it's not necessary at all that we all spend decades learning our lessons the hard way. We can help each other, we can show each other shortcuts, and we can sponsor each other's success. How? Well, one of the ways is co-mentorship, networks, and mutual support. So I want to share some rules, lessons, and facts that I wish I had known earlier. Number one is that hard work is not everything, and perfection is in fact not a good thing. So equally as important as hard work are sleep, time off, good food, exercise, fun activities to recover your creativity, support from other people, friends, etc. Number two, not everything is in your control. Your career depends on people with power giving you a chance. Before I got my first ever proper job that was with full pay, that was not an internship, it was pure luck, in fact, that worked in my favor. Or rather than luck, let's say it was someone believing in me. The position that I had applied for was for a one-year maternity cover. The HR person had done a first sift through the pile of applications, and they divided them into no, yes, and maybe. They had put my application on the no pile because I had only had a few years of experience, and most of them were in internships or freelance gigs. The hiring manager was not happy with this approach and said to the HR person, look, you're expecting someone with 10 plus years of experience to give up their job and come here for one meager year of maternity cover work? That's not realistic. This person will only be frustrated and disappointed and might even leave before the year is up. So let's instead go for someone who has only a little bit of experience, but who is motivated and views this as an opportunity. Think about it, they will do so much better. The hiring manager then decidedly put my application from the no pile to the maybe pile, and then later to the yes pile. Eventually, they not only hired me, but they gave me a permanent contract because I did such a good job in that 1 year. So yes, my hard work was important, but what moved the needle was that the hiring manager trusted and believed in me enough to give me a chance. It could have turned out a different way. Which brings me to another very important lesson. You must learn to differentiate between true allies and mentors that you can trust and rely on versus energy suckers, secret sabotagers, and credit stealers that you need to protect yourself and your work from. I once had a boss who I really admired. She was a really good professional, incredibly competent, and very successful. I trusted her, and I was dying for her to be my mentor. It was only much later that I realized that she was actually exploiting me instead of supporting me. She often uplifted other men on the team, but rarely did the same to women and never did the same to me. Once I had turned to her for advice because I was working 70 plus hours per week, and I asked her, "I can't continue like this. What should I do? Really, I need some advice. I don't know what to do because I'm struggling so much." She told me I should go the extra mile. I was puzzled. Which one of these many miles is the extra one? I can't tell them apart anymore. So I began to ask myself, is she really interested in me succeeding? So over the coming months, I observed her behavior, and she was actively mentoring and supporting the men on our team and was overall much more lenient towards them. And her standards towards women, on the other hand, were insane. I realized that there are some women who, over the course of their hard and painful years in environments that are misogynistic, internalize that same misogyny. It is sad, but there is a simple and effective remedy to not becoming like this, and that is actively supporting and showing solidarity with other women. And for me, I've discovered that there's one simple and little question that helps me identify if someone is a true ally or a secret sabotager. So I ask myself, with which aim is this person taking an interest in me or saying or advising something? What do they want out of it? What do they have to gain or lose from me succeeding? Some people mask their jealousy in fake curiosity or their exploitative behavior in flattery. Oh, what would we do without this? Please work some 20 hours more today. Thanks. I'm not saying distrust every person that you meet, but be clear about the power dynamics and the implicit objectives that people might have. So, number four, you must know and enforce your own boundaries. I always used to think, once the work is done, I will rest and look after myself. Work first, myself second. I don't know about you, but in my subjective experience, there's two types of people in our generation: pre-burnout millennials and post-burnout millennials. I'm a post-burnout millennial. I have learned the hard way that I cannot put my mental, physical, and emotional well-being second. It does not work, neither for me, not for my career. My therapist taught me to flip the perspective. There are certain things that we are okay with. For example, my computer needs time to boot in the morning, and every now and then it needs a reboot or update. Certain things we have to wait and be patient for, like good food in a restaurant or whatever. And it's the same for me. I need rest in order to function. So I set out to change the way that I operate. So I asked myself, what are the things that make the weekends and holidays so nice and special for me? It's actually little things like sleeping enough, coffee in bed, writing in my journal every morning, a bit of yoga before having to face the world, going for a walk, seeing my friends. I now try to incorporate these things as much as possible into my weekdays. I do not start the workday unless I have had my coffee time. I schedule catch up with friends and allies in my company or outside during my work time because it makes me smarter, so I should be paid for it. I take some of my meetings from my phone while I'm on a walk. These things do not reduce my productivity. They increase it because I'm rested, focused, open for inspiration and creativity and problem solving. Humans are no robots. And if even my computer is entitled to some booting and rebooting time, so am I, and so are you. Number five, salary negotiations matter a lot, and so do promotions. You don't have to kill yourself over a job to deserve a raise or promotion. You deserve it simply for doing good work, because white men get promotions simply for doing the basics of their job. And white men fail upwards all the time. This is a little quote from Anna Delvey. If you haven't seen Inventing Anna on Netflix, it's a good watch. People often ask me why I'm so determined to close the pay gap, the gender pay gap. They're like, Christina, you're so radical. Why do you insist on equal pay? Don't you earn enough? But this is not about money. It's about appreciation, respect, and equity, and it's about opportunity cost. The gender pay gap is approximately 20%. So converted into time, that's one full day every single week. Or put differently, imagine this. Every year, starting in mid-October, you get paid holidays from work until the end of December. You're free to do whatever the hell you want with your time for 2.5 months, and you're still getting your full pay for those 2.5 months. What would you do? Sleep for a week? Go on holiday for 2 weeks? Do that project you've been wanting to do for so long for 3 weeks? You'd still have a whole month left after that. Just picture this. That time belongs to us, but the pay gap is robbing us from it. Consider the opportunity cost of this pay gap time. And don't forget that the pay gap is even bigger for women of color, people with disabilities, etc. What could you do for yourself, your loved ones, your friend who's struggling, for your community, your art, your passion projects, etc.? Another example, you don't get the promotion you were going for. Who gets it instead of you matters a lot. Maybe not so much on the individual level. Maybe that straight white man who got the promotion instead of you really was that tiny bit better, at least viewed through the lens of the traditional sexist, racist, ableist, classist world we live and work in. But statistics and facts and patterns don't lie, especially in a world where there's 25% more female university graduates than male ones. What is happening here? And again, the critics say, oh, you're so radical. Why do you insist on getting that promotion? Aren't you successful enough? Why do you always want more, more, more? But again, it matters a lot. Think about it. Who could you support once you're in a position of power? Who could you uplift and empower simply by not shutting the door behind you, simply by not putting up the ladder under yourself? By simply operating in the professional and public space, you become a role model to others, whether you want it or not. Especially if you're a woman of color, a person with a disability, or if you have other characteristics that are not so commonplace in the traditional old school professional world. Wow, she earns this much. She has this leadership position, does this cool job in spite of her restriction or handicap or family and 5 kids. Maybe I can do it too. Yes, you can. It's only hard to do it alone, so we all need communities. Number 6, trust in what you believe to be right, and don't be swayed by people trying to make you doubt yourself, especially if they're not giving any realistic solutions or strategies with their criticism. They're just doing it to sow doubt in you. Do not fall for it. Did you know that our gut feeling is so much smarter than our conscious self? I want to tell you about a study that a psychologist named Antonio Damasio did a while back. So people were put in front of a computer where they had 4 decks of cards in front of them. They could choose which deck or which card they wanted to turn over by clicking on it. So depending on which card they pulled, they would either lose money or gain money. So people started clicking on the decks and turning over cards and either losing or winning. Unbeknownst to them, 2 of the decks of cards were good decks, so they contained more rewards than punishments, and 2 of the decks were bad decks. But it wasn't so obvious that they would realize this. And here's where it gets interesting. As the participants were playing this game, the researchers were monitoring their skin conductance, which is a measure of our nervous system arousal. So as the game progressed and the players were turning over these cards, their skin conductance started to flare up whenever they considered taking a card from the bad deck. They would hover with the mouse over the like rigged bad deck, and something in their body would say threat. So when they were hovering over that, their bodies, their nervous system, through their skin conductance, was indicating that there was the presence of a threat in their physiology. And yet consciously, the players, when asked, had no idea that this was happening. They had no idea that two decks were good and two decks were bad. They had no clue about the pattern that was present in the game. But they began to slowly but surely learn this pattern in an unconscious way and avoid those bad decks more and more as the game went on, showing that they were learning, in a sense, from their gut feeling. But again, all of this was non-conscious. So those of us who are more in touch with and trustful of our internal sensations are better at avoiding risks. And this is an ability that we can deliberately cultivate in ourselves to make use of the wisdom and experience that is stored, in a sense, within the body. So in short, being attuned to your gut feeling rules. Number 7, you can't do everything, but if you're clear about what it is that you want, you can pretty much do anything in some form. Years ago, I started writing down my goals into a vision journal, which I keep specifically for this purpose. Writing down my goals always makes me feel a bit embarrassed in front of my own self. I start thinking things like, what makes you think that you can do this, as if you're good enough for, you know, for doing this, that, all of that inner critic, blah, blah. I still kept doing it. And over time, what struck me was that for almost every goal, once I wrote it down and manifested it into existence, I found a way to get it done, even if I totally forgot that this was a goal of mine. Actually, in 2013 or something, I wrote in my vision journal that I would love to learn how to code, and I completely forgot about it. Until many years later, I signed up for coding school, I did my course, I finished it, and then I found this book again and I saw that I had written it down, and that was just too bizarre to be true, but it was true. And you know, another thing is that if I don't forget the goal, I get there much faster than I would have expected. So, you know, maybe that's something that you might want to consider. Getting a vision journal, you can write down the goals of your wildest dreams, and little pro tip, just quadruple them in ambition, because the sky is the limit. And once you write them down, a couple of things will happen. First, you will start paying attention to other people who have achieved this goal. You may even think, oh, if they can do it, maybe I can do it. Spoiler, of course you can. You may feel emboldened to talk about it to people. They will share their advice and other relevant examples, other people to reach out to who can help you in your research. You will uncover what it is about this goal that excites you. Maybe there's a faster and easier way to get there. And once you've achieved one goal, you'll develop more trust in yourself. Number 8, this is almost it, I promise. Knowing yourself is everything. So what are your values? What are your dreams, your fears, your desires? What motivates you? What makes you sad, paralyzed, doubtful? Which things or people are good for you and which are bad for you? This will not only help you to grasp the opportunities life presents you with, but it will also make it easier for you to spot unhelpful habits and unhelpful people. It is very hard for someone to manipulate and exploit you if you know, accept, and love yourself. And then the last one, invest in community. Call me esoteric, but I genuinely do believe that if you help other people, help will come to you when you need it. Sharing your knowledge and skills will create an environment of trust where others will feel safe enough to share their knowledge and skills with you. And the better you get at spotting energy suckers and secret sabotagers and credit stealers, the more confidently and fully can you invest in your true allies. And believe me, the return on investing in community is huge on a professional and a human level. There is research showing that women who spend more time with other women are happier, healthier, more successful, less depressed, you name it. Is that really because they share the same gender? I think it's more likely because we share similar experiences. We can relate and empathize with struggles that remind us of our own. And with people who we can turn to for advice and emotional support when we need it, and who we can give advice and emotional support to. And actually, it also makes us happy to do something good for other people. So how valuable is that? So to continue on this path of community building, I've started a co-mentorship space that is open for women who are active and working in technology, policy, and sustainability. And the concept is very simple. It's drinks and fun and mutual mentorship. And the goal is to help you develop a support system that will always have your back. So once a month, there's an in-person drink in Brussels with a tiny bit of talks and inspirations, but mostly drinks and fun. And this is accompanied by a newsletter at which you can find under christinawunder.substack.com, where I gather resources related to different challenges. So things like salary negotiation, CV writing, interview prep, dealing with mansplaining, mental load and personal relationships, financial planning, etc. So there will also be profiles on community members who are happy to be profiled, so that other members know who to turn to for advice on a certain industry or career profile, be it in tech or developing or policy, sustainability, consulting, etc. Because yeah, there's so much beauty in community, and I'm very grateful to be part of this one, and hope to see you very soon, hopefully in person at the next Women.Code event, and maybe at one of my co-mentoring drinks. So as I said, you can find all the infos at christinawunder.substack.com, and looking forward to seeing you soon.
This was my talk at Women.Code BE. If you enjoyed it, share it with someone you think might like it too. Reach out to me with any feedback, and if you want more, subscribe to my newsletter at christinawunder.substack.com. And if you speak German, check out my other episodes on this podcast where I wonder, why is the world the way it is? Why is it so hard to change anything? And what can we all do to make our world a better place? See you next time.